This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've probably heard it before. They're such a narcissist. It becomes the go-to insult, the diagnosis, the red flag on social media. But narcissism is more than just a buzzword. What is it? What actually makes someone a narcissist? And how much of it starts in childhood? Well, joining us with some fascinating research is Associate Professor Megan Willis from Australian Catholic University. Megan, welcome back to Drive.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the basics. What is narcissism and how do we know the difference between someone with a few, I suppose, narcissistic traits and someone with full-blown narcissistic personality disorder?
Yeah, so narcissistic personality disorder is, it's quite a rare mental health diagnosis. So probably only around 1% of the population would receive a diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder. So it's characterized by a grandiose sense of self-importance, entitlement, lack of empathy, exploitation, a kind of preoccupation with success, beauty, ideal love. They're the kind of core traits of someone with narcissistic personality disorder. But we also kind of conceptualize narcissism as a cluster of personality traits. So everyone falls somewhere on the spectrum of either having low levels of narcissism or high levels or somewhere in between.
Has popular psychology or social media, I suppose, hijacked the, the 1% who are diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder and hijacked the term narcissism to mean that? Is that what's going on?
I think with the frequency with which it's being used, it clearly is referring to something other than what, we psychologists think of as narcissism. It's a difficult one. I think, the label gets thrown around a lot, I think, almost to describe anyone who you've had a bad experience with, but the actual attributes associated with narcissism are much more nuanced than that.
Now, your research, you've looked at attachment styles and what role they play. Tell us what they are.
Yeah, so attachment styles, essentially it's born out of attachment theory, which is a theory that proposes that our early experiences with primary caregivers shape our beliefs about ourselves and others, and that these beliefs are thought to persist into adulthood and then influence how we experience and navigate adult relationships. So there's, a reasonable correspondence between your attachment style as a child and your attachment style as an adult, and they seem to kind of play out in how you navigate relationships, the different attachment styles. So for instance, a secure attachment style is associated with kind of healthy, stable relationships in adulthood, and it tends to arise when as a child you felt safe and loved and supported and your parents were reliable and consistent. But when they weren't, that is when insecure attachment can develop.
And is it the insecure attachment that can lead potentially to some traits of narcissism?
Yeah, so in the research that we've recently published, what we did was we looked at all the studies that have looked at the link between narcissism and attachment styles in adulthood. And what we found was that insecure attachment styles were linked with a particular type of narcissism, which is known as vulnerable narcissism. So there's two main types of narcissism, grandiose narcissism, which is kind of, the extroverted, kind of overtly grandiose style of narcissism that people tend to think about when they think of narcissism, whereas vulnerable narcissism is more associated with kind of a more shy, introverted personality style. But people high on this trait tend to be hypersensitive to criticism, and they have this kind of defensive, insecure grandiosity that masks fragile self-esteem. So they tend to kind of need excessive levels of approval and admiration and validation to kind of maintain their self-esteem. So it was vulnerable narcissism that we found was associated with insecure attachment styles in adulthood.
For people who've dated or worked with someone high in, say, this vulnerable narcissism, often you hear that there's a sense of being, you know, of walking on eggshells around them. Does that line up with what the research says?
Yeah, so I think that walking on eggshells, you'll tend to experience that if you're, you know, in a relationship or working with someone that's hypersensitive to criticism. So where, you know, you can't even predict when they'll have a negative reaction because their sensitivity is so heightened. So, yeah, that's a really key feature of vulnerable narcissism. It's like, you know, even the slightest constructive criticism is likely to elicit an extremely strong, you know, negative reaction from them.
How do you work with someone who is like that and has those traits of narcissism?
Good question. I think it's tricky, and obviously how you navigate that is going to depend on what particular work environment you're in. I mean, I think of it as it can sometimes be thought of a bit like how you would deal with a child who doesn't get their own way, right? Like it's best not to give in to them and not to feed into what they're asking for. So with an adult, I think it's about setting really firm boundaries and, you know, keeping engagement to the minimal, essential engagement. So they talk a lot when we talk about narcissists about the grey rock method. So that's like really limiting your interactions with people that are high on these traits to essential interactions and trying to be as kind of boring and uninteresting as you can, so they kind of lose interest in engaging with you.
Right. We're chatting with Associate Professor Megan Willis from ACU about what makes someone a narcissist. Now, Megan, I'm just wondering, is there a big prevention message here, especially around parenting and child development? Because you mentioned at the start, you know, someone feels secure, they're loved, they tend not to develop those narcissistic traits. Is that the message in this? It's about being able to be a good parent and provide the best opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I really hope people will take away from the research, is that we know that the attachment styles that children form are likely to influence how they navigate relationships and how they connect with people in adulthood. And so we know that, you know, different forms of child maltreatment and insecure attachment styles are linked with developing vulnerable narcissism, in addition to obviously a whole host of other, you know, mental health disorders. So I think we really need to be thinking about how we're parenting our children and the effect of different parenting styles on how they develop. So, you know, there's recently been research published on rates of child maltreatment in Australia, and they paint, you know, a pretty bleak picture of, you know, I think 30% of Australians have experienced physical abuse, around 30% emotional abuse when they were children. So I think we really need to be, you know, helping parents to understand, you know, what are the best ways of parenting children, because it's something that we're never really taught, right? You just become a parent and you have to work it out. But in the age of social media, there's so much information around. How do you know, you know, what is right? And I think it would be really good if there was a bit more work being done to spread the message around, you know, what are the effects of different forms of maltreatment on kids, and how can we parent in a more gentle and nurturing way that's going to set our kids up for success.
Megan, the other thing that I'm thinking about now, and, you know, I've been guilty of it as well in saying, oh, my ex is a narcissist, and we do tend to dismiss people. And I'm thinking, as we're talking, there's a big thing about empathy here, isn't there? Both for people around us and those who do have narcissistic traits. Because if we go by what the research is saying, you know, it doesn't mean that they've necessarily had a good upbringing with their relationships with their parents. And whilst it might be difficult for those of us around them to interact with them, there's kind of something that we can show some empathy towards as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think if you kind of think about what the research says, it is really, I guess it paints a really sad picture for them. I mean, I don't think a, you know, childhood trauma should excuse kind of bad behavior when you're an adult. And I guess at the core of narcissism is, you know, a lack of empathy towards others and, you know, exploitation and manipulation, right? So I don't want people to take away from this research that if, for instance, they're in a relationship with someone who may potentially be, you know, a narcissist and it's an abusive relationship, well, then that excuses their behaviour, because it certainly doesn't. But I think, you know, I guess it can help us to understand a little bit about what might be happening for these people inside. Like, I think often there's a great deal of pain there, and that's what these behaviours are really, really trying to mask. But it's, yeah, I think important that, you know, I think maybe if you've got some empathy and understanding of the situation, sometimes, you know, maybe we take it a little bit less personally ourselves if we're having interactions with people behaving that way, and realise it's not about us, it's all about them and, you know, their need to feel important and special. That's kind of what lies at the core of it.
Megan, just one more question before we let you go. In terms of someone who perhaps does have, you know, full-blown narcissistic personality disorder, what's the treatment for it?
So there are different therapies that are effective. So, I mean, given what our research has shown with vulnerable narcissism, people that present, you know, with that, the attachment-focused therapies might be particularly effective. I mean, the critical thing, I guess, with therapy is there needs to be a willingness to change, and that's often quite challenging with narcissistic personality disorder. But, you know, when someone wants to change their behaviour, there's certainly, you know, several therapies that kind of look at attachment-related wounds and how to heal those and shift to healthier ways of engaging with others.
Megan, thank you so much for chatting with us on Drive today.
Great, thanks for having me.
Thank you. That was Associate Professor Megan Willis from the Australian Catholic University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.